Trofinco's Valor Program for veteran entrepreneurs is especially tailored to support veterans in transitioning to business ownership with dedicated financial solutions and resources. For traveling entrepreneurs, the program offers flexibility and support in funding, critical for those exploring new markets. Business owners will find the personalized approach and understanding of veteran needs invaluable for expanding operations or starting new ventures. Empower your entrepreneurial journey with the Valor Program and turn your business vision into reality. New U-Life Somaderm Gel. Travelers and business owners can benefit from enhanced energy levels and improved sleep quality. Crucial for adjusting to new time zones and maintaining peak performance during business operations. Entrepreneurs will appreciate the potential anti-aging effects, supporting a dynamic, youthful appearance vital for first impressions. Click here now to revitalize your body's natural rhythms and present your best self in every meeting and adventure.
Welcome to The Tactical Traveler, the podcast where adventure meets precision and the journey is just as important as the destination. Bringing you the inside scoop on the most thrilling and efficient travel experiences. Each episode, we'll dive into the art of travel, from navigating off the beaten path destinations to mastering the art of packing like a pro. So buckle up, get your compass ready, and let's embark on a new adventure with Tactical Traveler. Here's your host, John Rankin.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Tactical Traveler. Today, I have an awesome guest with us who is coming all the way from Switzerland to join us. He has traveled extensively and was really looking for an opportunity to travel and then fell upon this business opportunity that's really given him the freedom to travel and to do the things that he felt like he wanted to do in his life. Everybody, welcome to the show, Walter Steele. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So, you know, I love your story, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I'm a traveler by passion, and I love it that you were the type of person who was presented with a dream, a desire, but you didn't actually have the ability to do it. And so instead of getting, you know, all up in your feels and getting your feelings hurt, you actually went and looked for a solution that allowed you to make money and allowed you to travel the world. I just find that to be absolutely amazing. And, you know, as we dig in today, I just kind of want that to be the guiding principle of what we talk about is how you use business to really facilitate your personal desires. And I mean, man, now you're living in one of the most beautiful countries in the world, still running business. So I just wanted to tell you up front, man, I find that to be absolutely incredible.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Yeah, I know what you're doing is great as well. And I mean, that's just life. I just kind of stumbled upon it. You know, it was nothing really planned and it just kind of happened for me.
Yep. Now we share a very common story here, in that both of us, our first independent trip was to Guatemala. Tell me a little bit about your trip.
Oh man, that was 17 years ago? I was 18 years old. I just got done working a construction job, but I got laid off, the job was finished. And I spent some time at community college, but I wasn't sure which direction I wanted to go in.
Yeah,
so yeah. I ended up at kind of my mentor friend's house. You know, he's a little bit older, and we're sitting at his house that evening, and I said, you know, I got like $4,000. To me at that time, I was like, whoa, wow, like, you know, I'm rich. I'm 18. I don't really want to go back to college because I don't know what I want to do. What should I do? And he just said, well, why don't you go to Guatemala? I said, what? To Guatemala. I was like, Where is that? Like, I didn't even know anything about the country, really. I said, well, why not? And I said, well, if I run out of money, will you save my butt? And he says, yeah, we'll figure something out. And so I went upstairs on the computer, bought a round trip ticket for 3 months to Guatemala. That's how and my the whole life completely changed from there. Like everything from that moment on, a completely different direction. And it's probably the best decision of my life. And to this day, I think it was probably my favorite trip, or at least shocking, eye-opening, life-changing experience.
Yeah. Now, what year was that that you went to Guatemala?
2005, I believe it was. Okay. Which is a completely different Guatemala than you saw.
Yeah, completely different.
They just came out of the Civil War. Things were starting to develop a little bit. I didn't speak Spanish very well. And so I thought, you know, just I'm going to have a home base. My home base was Antigua. And from there, I met a lot of Europeans. And I was taking Spanish classes. Let's see. I used Antigua as my hub. I went to Tikal. I went to Lake Atitlan. I went climbing volcanoes. You know, I heard crazy stories about the war, which I've never heard of before. You know, even my Spanish teacher was telling me about how her mother was pregnant with her and they had to hide in the basement and the army came in and just, you know, they slaughtered the whole town. I mean, it was a pretty gruesome civil war where over 200,000 died, and it was in fairly recent history. So,
it
was shocking to me. It was like real eye-opening. I was like, wow, there's all this going on. And I had no idea. And that influence eventually what I ended up studying. I studied international political science. And yeah, it really changed who I was.
Yeah, it did for me as well. And you know, like you alluded to, because we talked about it, I actually landed in Guatemala at the very end of their Revolutionary War. Had no clue, because in 96, we didn't really have the internet or cell phones the way we do today. I really didn't know. I just got on a plane just like you and was really uneducated about what was happening in the country and landed smack dab in the middle of it. And for all of you that are listening, let me tell you, Antigua in Guatemala is beautiful. And the mountain hiking and the volcano hiking is a very powerful thing in Guatemala. I loved it.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, not just hiking Pacaya was great, but I just remember coming home one evening, you know, out with the friends, and I ended up sitting down looking out to the mountains in the middle of the night for about a half an hour because a volcano just erupted and lava was spewing out the top, coming down the bottom. And then you just waited, and as it cooled, it just kind of the light slowly went out until it reached the pinnacle of the volcano and just went out. And I was like, wow, that was a good show.
Yeah. And even when I was there, you know, the volcanoes were active. You could see them in the distance. You could see them smoking, or you could even see them, you know, with the, you know, the lights at night. It was just absolutely amazing. And I don't think people really understand, even though at least when I went, Guatemala was still a very much a third world country, how much natural beauty Guatemala has.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But with that beauty comes a price too.
Yeah.
I mean, they had big, huge landslides, eruptions. It was like 2016 where like just the town was towns were absolutely devastated by an eruption after an earthquake. Things like that happen quite often. And these small villages, you know, they just rebuild on top of the ash. They don't really relocate much. And anyway, causes some humanitarian issues.
No, and it definitely does. So you get to Guatemala on just a whim, basically. Tell me about how you get the business idea that you have. Tell us a little bit about your business and tell me about how it works.
Yeah, so, okay, I'm going to have to fast forward a little bit there. So that was my first trip, and that was 3 months, and I was enamored by traveling and meeting people. And after that, I went back to work in the construction field. I actually considered joining the military to keep the travels going, but I was able to connect with a decent job where I could, you know, work hard and make decent, okay money, and then be able to just go on another trip, right? So I plugged into that. I went to Europe and I stayed at the houses of people I met in Guatemala, and I came back. And then I moved all around the United States. I moved to Boston. Yeah, so I'm from Seattle, Washington area, Bellingham, actually. And moved to Boston, started going to school there. And then moved to San Luis Obispo, California, and eventually ended up getting a degree in international political science with a focus in Latin America and a minor in history from University of California, San Diego. And I guess the reason why I say my degree is just because, I mean, really, it was that trip to Guatemala that really determined that. It's the whole reason why I did it, because I was so interested in it. And then after that, I taught English in Spain for a year. And I got an offer to work for a nonprofit called Guatemala Housing Alliance. And in Guatemala, it's a 6-month stint and as a project director. And my job was to find families in need around the lake and build homes. So get the suppliers, get the laborers, and coordinate that effort to build a fairly standard home. And it was that time that I was there on Lake Atitlan in San Pedro, La Laguna. Well, I mean, I had like my daily life. I was around other expats, and there's this man named Richard who really influenced my life. He was in his 70s. He's kind of cantankerous. He didn't get along with everybody he met because he's very strong with his ideas, but we love to debate, and we end up being really close friends as well. And there's one thing he always told me. He says, boy, you got to get on the internet. He says, you have to start a business online because that's the future.
Now, and for sure, the internet is the future. And what year was this that he told you that?
Yeah, it's 2011.
Nice.
So you know, I was still on the cusp. It wasn't quite, you know, mainstream and everyone knew the obvious. Yeah, so besides that and me having the desire to want to make a difference in the village that I was in, because, you know, one of the biggest things that they suffer from is just consistent work. I mean, their largest industry is tourism. And I mean, imagine now. I mean, it's completely dead.
Right.
It's a ghost town. And that would happen every once in a while throughout the year, where no one would come in and a lot of businesses would suffer. So I founded Atitlan. Well, so I looked for a way that I can produce jobs or create jobs there. And I determined that I needed to buy a product and sell it in the United States online. So I met this man during my work with a nonprofit named Victor Tuch. And I mean, some people just have that entrepreneur spirit. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
Like this guy was doing the craziest stuff that you would never even think of. Like the fair of San Pedro, which is really not that big at all. He was getting lucha libre wrestlers out of Guatemala City, bringing them there to have a big show and made money off the ticket sales. Like he had his own radio show. He had a restaurant. And so I thought, you know, he was fairly helpful navigating certain things around the area. And I thought, well, maybe he'll help me find something I can sell around the lake. And so I called him up and said, hey, Victor, you want to help me out? Like, I want to start this project. He said, sure. And so he started introducing me to different producers around the lake. The first person he introduced me to was a coffee producer. And nice. We're looking at purchasing coffee, 100% Arabic coffee. And as you know, I'm sure most people are listening, they know coffee is a big crop coming out of Guatemala.
Yep.
And the lake. And while it was interesting to me, because I was like, well, there's definitely demand. And, you know, who doesn't love coffee? There's a lot that I didn't want to get my hands dirty with. I mean, like, for example, I know on the lake that the school schedule for kids, you know, when you're going to have spring break, for example, is going to correspond with the harvest of the coffee. And these kids will go out in the fields, they're going to help the parents, and they're going to harvest these beans and blah, blah. And I didn't really want to have that as an issue, or I wanted something that I had somewhat control over the working conditions and knowing what was going on, right? So I kind of discarded that, or I just want to keep looking to see what my other options were. And he introduced me to the avocado farmers. I could buy an avocado for 10 cents. I was, these guys would climb trees with these ropes, climb up these tall, tall trees, which they actually use these trees as a crop to cover the coffee because the coffee doesn't do well in direct sunlight. So the lake is great for coffee and avocados. And I determined I don't want to deal with the FDA. Like, I don't want to get involved. So I kind of scratched that one off, and I didn't have that much money. I was just out of college. I had 30 grand in debt, right? And so, like, eventually I started my company with a $3,000 cash advance on my credit card, right? So, so I was being, like, real kind of risk aversive. And anyway, he introduced me to a guy who produced leather, and his business wasn't doing very well, and his name is Domingo Sakek. Great guy. Sat down with him, started talking about, you know, what he does. He showed me some of his products, and we started building a relationship. He's a family man. He has three kids. He sent his two daughters to high school and college, which to me, that's a big feat. I mean, most, like, there's a illiteracy in education is, and not having an education is a big problem there. And he saw a big importance. And I thought, you know, like, this man is someone I could maybe build a business with, right? We hold a lot of the same values. And so, yeah, I founded Atitlan Leather with him. And that's how I kind of landed on starting this business.
Yeah. Now, when we were talking earlier, you were talking about your desire to really support the local economy. And, yeah. You know, I think that that's so important on so many different levels, but I see in business where it's almost the abuse of the local economy. So talk to me a little bit about that, and talk to me about how, you know, that idea of supporting the local economy instead of abusing it really guided you in your decision-making process.
Well, I mean, I went there for a reason. And that was to hopefully, like, leave it better than how I came. You know, that was kind of my job. And I come from going abroad, one of the biggest things you realize is how fortunate you are coming from a Western world country. No matter if you could live in the Bronx and your life is much better off than if you were born in Guatemala, for the most part, unless you're born in some oligarch family that's there. You know, the opportunities, it's night and day. So sometimes it's difficult to have a conversation and not kind of come off as arrogant. But I wanted to focus on women empowerment. So, like, the girls going to school, that's very important, especially for the family unit. It's shown statistically in studies that, you know, women who have an income will support and give the majority of that income to their kids and their family, while the men are more likely to waste it and not spend it on those investments like education that are important to the family. These are policies that were within the nonprofit, so that kind of guided and helped me understand the importance of this. Like, so for example, when we built a house for these people, I had to decline one candidate because the man did not want to have his wife on the house, on the title. And to us, that was a requirement.
Right. But yeah, and it's very different the way they perceive women and even, you know, female children in Guatemala, or at least it was when I was there. I hope that it's gotten a lot better. But there's a very, I would almost even say, you know, how would you say it? Like, just the way that they think about women is very backwards, or almost like 17th century, like, you know. So
yeah, I've looked at it that way. I think that's the best way to look at it. It's like, so take the lens of the prism of, like, how did we look at women in 1915 in the States? You know,
yeah,
we didn't give them any rights. They just stayed home and worked, and they were, you know, kind of, they're the home. And it's the exact same thing. But now in the Western world, we have, well, contraception was a huge thing too. I mean, that is another huge issue in Guatemala that a lot of nonprofits are coming to work in, because it's given the woman power to control their family planning and life. And that's another huge empowerment thing for women. But yeah, as the economies have evolved and women have been more in the workforce and been able to participate in the workforce, just with the advent of a washing machine, you know, not having so many chores to do in the house, things change. you know, and then women are able to participate more and more. And these economies and these populations, they're very poor. I mean, there's, I forget the exact percentage. I mean, it's been a long time since I've been looking at those, but like a high percentage of people in Guatemala make less than a dollar a day. So it is worth your wife grinding corn and making tortillas in the house all day so you can eat, you know, then sending her to try to get a job because, well, there is no work or hardly any. And yeah, that's just the reality of it. And that's kind of the situation that they find themselves in. But to their credit, I mean, they're going in the right direction. It's definitely getting much better. You know, the world, I like to be a kind of like Pinker's, like Steven Pinker mindset, where I like to look at the world like glass half full, where just about every metric that we have today, like as a species, like we're doing much better.
Yeah.
Way better.
No, I think that we for sure are. So how many years did you spend in partnership with Guatemala where you were actually down there a lot? I know it's very different now, but how long was that really a part of your story to where you were down there all the time?
Oh, so that was like the 6 months. So I'm sorry to kind of back up a little bit. You know, part of the way that I was giving back to the community, not only was he hiring women and sending his kids to school and those things, but it's also Guatemalan owned, you know? And so that's, he had the production size. It's his shop, it's his tools, it's his employees. You know, and a lot of times, you know, big corporations, it's theirs, right? So like the wealth is extracted, that word. And so that's also a big difference in what setup that I have that say a typical corporation might have, right?
Right.
So in terms of my business relationship with him and how long, so I was there for 6 months and then I'd come back every year. And it took a lot of trust, you know, it's like, you always have to be worried about scams. And there's a lot of things we had to iron out. You know, there's a lot of issues like quality control. And I don't know, if you look on Amazon, we had like the best selling leather money belt on the market until like one of the buckles came out not so good. And the pin was breaking and he didn't catch it. And so I got a batch of bad buckles and boom, you know, just a series of bad reviews really affected the sales of that product, you know, and that's just one of the things that issues we had in our relationship. But so I go back every year until I think the last year was, do you remember when was the World Series when everyone had Zika? The Zika was a big thing.
2014 or 15.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been there since then because, so I have a young family. And I ended up going to Guatemala and we talked to our gynecologist, well, our doctor, my wife's doctor. And yes, whoops. And I said, you know, what's the probability if I get Zika and I give it to my wife and my wife contracts it, what's the probability that my baby's going to have issues? Like, so she was 6-7 months pregnant at the time. And they said, absolutely zero. I said, good, because if it's anything over zero, I'll just plan my schedule, my trip another time.
Right.
So I go to Guatemala. I get Zika. I had no idea, right, until I get back. And my wife gets it, and the whole world freaks out on us, the whole medical community within Spain, saying, are you crazy? What were you thinking? Blah, 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 blah. Oh. I mean, it was stressful.
Root Brands Wellness's Zero In offers a competitive edge over other nootropics like Joe Rogan's Alpha Brain by focusing on natural gut health axis optimization, providing clearer cognitive function and sustained attention without artificial stimulants. Travelers will benefit from enhanced mental clarity during long journeys, while entrepreneurs and business owners can leverage improved focus for strategic planning and execution. Elevate your mental game beyond conventional limits and outperform your competition with Zero In today.
And luckily for us, our daughter came out just fine. But
that would be stressful.
Yeah, it was rough.
So at what point did you move to Spain? And then let's kind of, you know, transition a little bit here. So you were originally living in the U.S. Then you take this, you know, off the wall opportunity and you go down to Guatemala. you spend a couple of trips down there, you end up finding a way to make money and support the local economy and start a nonprofit that helps them overcome some of the cultural biases. You know, at what point did you move to Spain in that journey?
I was working for a nonprofit that was helping them, but I was in Spain. So when I was in college, I went to Spain to study abroad. I just thought, if I'm going to spend this kind of money on tuition, I might as well like get the benefit of being abroad.
Right.
Because it's almost the same price, really. Like, you didn't have to pay much more. And I determined my destination based on where all my credits would be applied to my degree. Right. So, because I mean, I'm paying university out of my pocket. So I thought, I'm not going to waste any of these credits. I'm not going to waste my time. So it took me to Cordoba, Spain. And there I met my current wife and came back, graduated. Let's see.
Multiple then
I
went wives. Back to,
what's that?
I said current wife. So like multiple wives.
Oh, no. Sorry. My one and only.
There you go.
My Let's one and
on
only.
The right pedestal.
Thanks. You saved me. You saved me from a couple nights on the couch.
Right.
Man, it's tough. You ask tough questions. It's to unravel all how this all came together. I graduated college. I went to Spain for a year. I still wasn't quite sure what I was doing, and I really wanted to see if this relationship would work out. And with my degree, I was able to teach in Spain and as an auxiliary English teacher. So I just
nice
conversation. So, and then after that's when I went to Guatemala, and then I went back to Spain.
Okay. All right.
So I'm in Spain. I have my business. It's slow. I need a day job, right? I started with a $3,000 cash advance. There's no money there really. So I'm reinvesting all my earnings back into the company. Uh-huh. And meanwhile, I'm trying to look for work in Spain, and there was just none. It was right after the crisis and it was rough. So I said, hey, sweetie, I got to go. Like, I'm one of those types. I have to work. You know, I need to keep moving. If I'm stagnant, I get depressed, I guess.
Right.
So
serial entrepreneur, man.
Yeah. So I just got to keep moving. So what I did is I went to the States and did the same construction work again, you know, swing the hammer, turn the wrenches. And with that money, I saw an opportunity in Spain to start a Airbnb business. So housing prices just tanked with the crisis in Seville. And that seemed to be the best market. Now, I guess one thing I want to take away from this here is that in every place you end up being, so my desire was to go where just kind of my heart followed me. Like my wife, I want to be with her. Yep. I want to go there. I figure out a way to make that happen. I want to go to Guatemala. I figure out a way to make that happen. And then once you get there, you look around, you see what are my options, you know? And both Spain and Guatemala, it made a lot more sense to try to start your own business because relatively little amount of capital. And also the labor markets aren't great, you know? So like if I went and got a job, I want to have enough money to probably go visit my mom, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like making things match up, making two ends meet. So I saw an opportunity in Spain and we're starting our young family. And I come back from work from the States. My little daughter, who was like 7 months old, like she started crying when I grabbed her. I was like, oh, I don't know if I can keep this up. So I pushed a little harder and then I was able to buy that apartment downtown. And then I was an Airbnb host in Spain for a while. And that's how I ended up surviving there and, you know, making everything work in my life the way I needed it to work.
Yeah. Now, do you still own those Airbnbs in Spain?
Yeah. So I still have one there and I just recently give it to a company to manage because not being there makes it kind of difficult.
Right, right. So now, you know, there's a couple of different things there that we could really pull out. You know,
like, I love it that you just kind of followed your heart and you were on the move looking for ways to solve your problems so that you could get back to your wife, so that you could earn income. And truly, to me, that's what being an entrepreneur is all about. Here's a problem. Here's what I want. How do I take my position and my problem and turn it into an opportunity and a solution? And it seems like, you know, I don't know, you can't be that old. What are you, 32 years old, 35?
35, yeah, you nailed it.
So, you know, you're still a really young guy, and here you are following your heart, problem, opportunity, problem, opportunity, problem, opportunity. And I love that thought process. And I think that that's for anybody who's listening, that's super important for you to understand that problems are nothing more than an opportunity disguised as discouragement. And you could really do a lot more in life if you just shifted your mindset and really looked at it the right way, which obviously after success, after success, after success, you've done. I mean, that's amazing.
You know, absolutely. I think what you're saying is completely right. It just depends on, like, if you have the courage and the know-how, and also you can't be scared to fail. Like, there's a lot of things I completely screwed up on and I didn't, you know, do well at, but it's a numbers game, you know. Yeah. Ultimately is that you don't bet it all on one thing, but you put a little bit in a lot of baskets and you look at all your options and you go from there, you know?
Yeah, so many things in life are really, truly a numbers game. And I can't remember who I was listening to, but they were talking about it this way. If you look at, like, the Major League Baseball and you have a guy that's batting 300 to 400, that guy's making millions. That means
that he's failing 60% of the time.
Yeah, he's missing, you know, 60 to 70% of the time, and he's making millions, you know?
Yeah.
We don't have to bat perfect. We just got to hit a couple out of the park. And, you know, so many people get wrapped up in fear about failure instead of approaching things as this is just a numbers game. If I go through the numbers, I'm going to hit.
Right, right. No, I think even Bezos, I was listening to something. People hear him talk about it like that too, you know. He says, I've lost billions and trying to do new things. But I just, you know, I didn't bet it all on one thing and I just kept going. And, you know, he's obviously got a couple home runs out of there. And right. Yeah, and that's how he did it. And also, you know, I'm imagining, like, your crowd is typically Americans. And I mean, I think it's very important also to know, like, my best friend said the same thing, Sid, right? The older guy, he says, you're a white male king. I said, and he said, you're a white male American. He says, you're king of the world. Like, what can't you do? And there's a lot that people might want to extrapolate from that and be negative about it. But like it or not, like, everybody from the United States has an upper hand to a large extent. And you can leverage that to do incredible things. Like, you could be dirt poor and and come out of that and travel and do the things you still want to do. I mean, whatever excuses you're thinking of coming up with, if you compare it to the excuses I see people have in, say, Lake Atitlan, where you live in dirt floors in a metal roof shack and no education, I mean, come on. Like, you're like 1,000 times more likely to succeed than they are, you know?
Yeah. And I think we were talking about this earlier too. I don't think most Americans realize that if you make like $30,000-$35,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of the wealthiest people in the world.
Yeah. And this is crazy, right? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, oh my God, I'm so poor. And I mean, like,
yeah, you don't know poor until you've been to Guatemala, until you've been to Pakistan. Till you've been to some of those other countries that are truly third world countries, you know. And I remember staying in Guatemala, dirt floor and mud walls.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm, that's, you know, it's such an important shift in the mental kind of framework when you understand what we really do have.
Well, absolutely. It gives you like encouragement, right? And it makes you feel empowered. And you don't think of what you can't do, but you think of the options that you can do. And once you turn that corner and you start looking at things as opportunities, things open up for you.
Right. Yeah, they do. Now, so you moved from Spain and now you're in Switzerland. How did that come about? Tell me about that.
So my wife, Rocio, she's an amazing woman and she's a very hard worker. She's very dedicated to her work. She's an agronomist. She studied engineering and she was working for Dow Chemical, which DuPont and Dow, I think, fused together. And now I think it's called Corteva. And, you know, the working conditions in Spain were not optimal. She's working lots and lots of hours, taking time away from the family and putting a little bit more pressure on me and the household, you know, because I can set my things aside to a certain extent where, you know, if someone has a 9-to-5 job, they can't really do that.
Yep.
So that's another thing I love about being an entrepreneur. Like, it really allows me to be with my girls. They're 4 and 5 years old, and I want to change or trade that for the world. I mean, to be with them at that age, it's incredible. It's like I'm setting a foundation that I'm going to benefit for the rest of my life. And I couldn't imagine not being there for them. But she, yeah, it's just tough working conditions. And so she had lots of experience, and she applied to a job working for Syngenta here in Basel, Switzerland. And she got it. And she got it in the middle of COVID. We had to move into our apartment without, you know, visiting. I've never been to Switzerland, actually, to be honest with you, before this move. And we were going to have to spend 10 days in quarantine.
With no furniture because you couldn't get any movers.
Well, we got really lucky on that.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, the relocation package. They're able to at least move our furniture for us, but even that was a pain in the butt, right? But you know, we made it work, and honestly, I love it here. This is great. Yeah. It reminds me so much of where I'm from. Mountains, nature, and even the culturally, I think an American has more in common with Swiss culture than they do with, say, Spanish culture.
Yeah. For sure. So you've made this transition in the midst of COVID to a brand new country, cold, for lack of better language. yeah. As you look around, what's the next entrepreneurial endeavor?
So I'm really going to try to push that on leather in these next. So I've kind of felt like I put on the back burner a little bit, and we had COVID was kind of devastating to the company and also to the country. And that, so, you know, the whole entire shop, the workers and even Domingo and his wife had to be on oxygen. She almost passed away. Sales dropped by over 50% because we focus a lot on travel items. And actually, even like Victor Tuch, the guy who introduced me to Domingo, he ended up passing away from COVID.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean it. Like, I have more connections with COVID through my experience and my relations with my Guatemalan colleagues and friends than anywhere else. I mean, you know, I don't even think I know anybody in my inner circle that has had a bad case of COVID.
Right.
Whereas, like, everyone in Guatemala, like, just poof, you know, and everything's just stopped. And so I've supported them a little bit. I've sent a little bit of money just to help them get through it. And I'm in a strange situation right now where, like, you know, when I was saying that every place is different.
Yep.
And now I'm in a place where that if I were just to go and get a minimum wage job, like, it's good money. And the minimum wage in Switzerland, I think, is actually like $35,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like it's pretty. And then salaries, it's not uncommon for you to start at 60 or 80 and things like that. But I really think that I really don't want to throw in the towel with the company. I feel like we're a team and we depend on each other. My kids are about to get into school. And so I really want to make the company strong and stronger than it even has ever been. And that's where the direction I think I'm going right now. And I'm going to give that probably a year or two and then see where I'm at and then go from there. But yeah, like I said, like my heart is really with those people right now. I feel for them. It's just, it's rough.
Yeah. So let's talk about the company for just a little bit here as we close out our time. And because I'm going to post a link to your company where people can buy product and help support. You've also got a couple of things going on with Guatemala and the nonprofit world. And in the podcast notes, I'll actually put those links and stuff so that people can follow you, can, you know, purchase, can support. But tell me what kind of travel products you guys have or some of your more popular leather products. And then tell me a little bit about what they can do to help in donating for Guatemala.
Okay. I appreciate that. Our biggest seller is our leather money belts. So when you travel, you know, when I went on a honeymoon with my wife to Thailand, I just put like $1,500 in euros in my belt pocket. So it has like a 19-inch zipper in the back. And I, whenever I need money, I just pulled it from there. I didn't have to worry about ATM fees. I didn't have to worry about being stuck without money, which has happened to me before when I was in Guatemala the first time. I ended up in Livingston and thank goodness that one of the travelers like just helped me out and gave me some money to get out of the rut I was in. But our leather money belts, we have accordion wallets, which are great gifts and cool little wallets that, you know, have great dividers and cards. And then another big thing that we're developing, and I'm really impressed with how well we make them, is the we have women's leather boots. They're Goodyear welted, all handmade leather soles, and I mean they'll fit your foot like a glove. They're amazing. So and then we offer those in custom as well, and we've got it down pretty well. Where, yeah, they're going to be a really nice fitting boot, and yeah, that's and we you know we have a couple of backpacks and like adopt kits, like other things related to travel, like little knickknacks.
That's cool. And they can find this on Amazon. What's the preferred method for them to purchase for you? Is it Amazon or directly from the site?
The site would be best. Amazon charges 15% to everyone who sells on there.
Yeah.
You know? So, Amazon would be best. But then, if you are a big Amazon shopper, I highly, highly, highly recommend using Amazon Smile. And they take a percentage of that purchase and they donate it to whatever organization that you choose from their list. And Guatemala Housing Alliance, which is the nonprofit I work for, who are giving scholarships to children and also building homes for people in need around the lake, they're on there. So if you use Amazon, if you're a common Amazon shopper, that's a great opportunity to really, you know, live your daily life how you usually live it, but also give back to people who really need it. And I also encourage to look into their programs for, say, sponsoring a child. You can send a kid to school for only $25 a month donation. And I think it's $50 or $100 a month for sending a student to college, to university.
That's awesome.
And this nonprofit, I mean, they're great. It's a family-run operation. There's no overhead costs. All the costs are covered by a trust from their family, and they've been doing a lot of great work down there.
Cool. Now, what's the easiest way for somebody to reach out to you if they're listening today and just something that you said really stuck out to them? What's the easiest way for them to get a hold of you?
Email would be the easiest. I mean, my website, whatever you do on there, I'm going to be the one on the other side making sure everything's okay. So you can either go on the website and contact me there. My email address is on there as well. So
great. And I'll put those both in the podcast notes so that people can reach out to you. Well, listen, man, I really appreciate your time and your heart and how similar of a story that we have. It's been great talking with you. And I look forward to just checking back with you and seeing what's going on in your life and what happens in Switzerland.
Thanks, John. Yeah, and I hope you do reach out and we talk again. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to everybody and to have my story heard a little bit more.
Great, man. Just stick on for a couple of seconds here. I'm going to close out the podcast and we'll chat a little bit more offline.
Sounds good.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review to keep the adventure going. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll continue to explore the world tactically. Until then, keep your itineraries tight and your travel spirits adventurous. Safe travels, and see you next time on Tactical Traveler.